I want you to try like a little thought experiment with me today.
Okay, I am intrigued.
Right. So imagine a history book, but not just any history book. We're pulling one off a shelf a century from now.
Okay, so the year is what, 2129?
Exactly. 2129. And a student opens this book, right, and they flip back to the years 2015 to 2029.
A very specific, very loud window of time.
Yeah, exactly. And the question is, how on earth would that future historian explain the massive, dizzying shifts that took place in the world during that specific era?
It's a fascinating premise, honestly, because, well, when you are actually living inside of history, it rarely feels like history.
No, it just feels like the daily news, you know?
Right, you're waking up, you're scrolling, it just feels like chaos and noise. But from a century out, the noise kind of fades and the actual machinery of the era becomes visible.
Which is exactly our mission for this deep dive today. We are opening up a really just incredible source document.
It really is.
It's a historical analysis titled Dossier Trump, 2015-2029, Appendix B, The 100 Most Important People.
And, you know, the reason this document is so compelling is that it doesn't look at abstract treaties or broad economic theories
Or
or
vague geopolitical trends.
exactly. It looks at the actual flesh and blood humans who drove those events.
The human face of a highly turbulent era.
Yes, but I do think we need to set some ground rules right up front, straight from the source.
Oh, definitely.
Because this list of 100 people, it is not a ranking of like good or bad. It's strictly an objective inventory of people who demonstrably influence democracy, technology, climate, the global order.
Right. So to be clear to you listening, we aren't taking political sides today.
Not at all. We are simply observing the historical chess pieces on the board, whether they are left wing, right wing, or completely outside of politics.
Okay, let's unpack this because there is a massive irony right at the heart of this dossier.
The title itself, right?
Yeah. You have Donald Trump's name on the marquee of the era. He is this central, unavoidable figure who, fundamentally altered American politics and international relations.
But the document doesn't just focus on him.
No, it spends all its time analyzing this massively diverse web of politicians, judges, tech CEOs, activists.
Because you just cannot understand this specific period of history by solely analyzing the disruptor. You have to analyze the ecosystem's reaction to the disruptor.
Which makes sense.
Right. Trump changed the vocabulary of global politics, certainly. He was a gravitational force. But what the text analyzes so well is how the rest of the system adapted.
Like the institutional stalwarts and the ideological opponents.
Exactly. How they countered him or even utilized that gravity for their own ends.
Right. So let's start at the epicenter of that disruption. Let's start in Washington, D.C.
The political core.
Yeah, because the dossier sets up some really fascinating counterweights here. You have Joe Biden, who the text frames as like the physical embodiment of institutional continuity.
He represented the system's attempt to stabilize and recover post-2020.
And then on the other hand, you have Kamala Harris, who they analyze as the primary symbol of these massive, undeniable demographic changes sweeping through the electorate.
And we also have to mention Nancy Pelosi, who served as Trump's primary, like, direct political opponent in Congress for years.
Right. But if we look past those immediate headline clashes, the presidency and the speakership, we find the people, the dossier labels, the institutional architects.
This is where it gets really interesting. Mitch McConnell is probably the most potent example here.
Oh, absolutely.
Because while the daily political theater was consuming, well, all the oxygen in the room,
McConnell was executing a generational strategy.
precisely, reshaping the Supreme Court. And this is where we have to look at the mechanics of power. A president is in office for 4, maybe 8 years, right?
Right. And a narrative cycle on cable news lasts, what, 4 days?
Exactly. But a federal judge appointed in their 40s is going to interpret the law of the land for 40 years.
Wow. Well, you put it that way.
McConnell understood that demographic shifts, like the ones represented by the Biden-Harris coalition, were moving against his party.
So his mechanism to counter that wasn't primarily legislative?
No, it was judicial. He used the immense political friction of the era as cover to quietly build a conservative firewall in the courts.
A firewall that would outlast almost everyone else on this list. And we also have to mention Mike Pence in this institutional category,
Oh,
right?
definitely. The dossier highlights his crucial role during the January 2021 constitutional crisis.
Right. And then you have other key protagonists mentioned, like Chuck Schumer, Kevin McCarthy, Akeem Jeffries, J.D. Vance.
It's a crowded board.
It is. And, you know, I've been thinking about an analogy for this dynamic, trying to visualize how all these DC figures interacted.
Okay, let's hear it.
So if we look at this era, is Trump the sun in a political solar system where everyone else, from Biden to McConnell to Pelosi, are just planets forced into orbit by his sheer gravitational pull? Or is he more like, I don't know, a surfer riding a massive demographic and institutional wave that was already crashing and he just happened to be the one on the board?
That's a great question. The solar system metaphor is tempting, but the sources show us it's actually a combination. It's closer to navigating a storm.
Okay, how so?
Well, Trump was undeniably a massive weather event that forced a reaction from everyone on the water, but people like McConnell or Pelosi weren't just bobbing around helplessly.
They have their own steering wheels.
Exactly. They were ship captains using the incredibly strong winds of that storm to steer the country toward their own very specific long-term destinations.
They were executing their own blueprints.
Yes. But, you know, this intense domestic gridlock, this massive storm in Washington, it didn't stay in Washington.
No, it never does. Because Congress couldn't pass long-term treaties, and because the U.S. was constantly looking inward, fighting with itself, it created a massive vacuum on the global stage.
Which forces us to look at the global ripple effect. The world had to wake up and adapt to a United States that was suddenly a very unpredictable partner.
And the dossier categorizes the international reaction into two distinct camps, right?
Right. First, you have the geopolitical heavyweights who saw an opportunity, Vladimir Putin pushing against the West.
And Xi Jinping architecting China's rise to fill the economic and diplomatic voids left by the U.S.
Exactly. And then, in direct reaction to that opportunism, you have Volodymyr Zelensky.
Who emerges right in the middle of this era as the global symbol of Ukrainian resistance.
And alongside him, defense figures and NATO leaders like Jens Stoltenberg, Mark Rutte, Lloyd Austin.
Right. But here's where it gets really interesting.
Oh, Appendix C.
Yes. Appendix C. This is the part of the document that, honestly, it really blew my mind. The dossier suggests that the greatest, most lasting geopolitical legacy of this window might not actually be anything that happened inside America.
Which sounds crazy,
Yeah,
right?
it does. But the text argues the most profound legacy is how Europe and Canada reacted to America's internal divisions.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, for 70 years, the global order relied on the United States as a steady, predictable anchor.
Right. If there was a security crisis, you just called Washington.
But as American politics became consumed by polarization and, you know, protectionist policies, that anchor started to drag.
I look at it kind of like a carpool.
A carpool.
Yeah, think about it. For decades, Europe and Canada were in this global carpool, and the U.S. was the guy who always owned the minivan and always did the driving.
Okay, I follow.
But suddenly, the driver starts getting into screaming matches with himself, threatening to drive off the road and talking about charging everyone else for gas.
So what do the passengers do?
They realize they have to go buy their own cars.
That is exactly it. That is the exact mechanism of what the dossier calls strategic autonomy.
Strategic autonomy.
Leaders like Emmanuel Macron in France, Olaf Scholz in Germany, Ursula von der Leyen at the European Commission, and Justin Trudeau in Canada, they realized they were dangerously exposed.
Because they couldn't just blindly rely on the U.S. anymore.
Exactly. They could no longer outsource their security or their tech infrastructure or their energy policy entirely to Washington.
Which means they had to start building their own defense capacities, securing their own semiconductor supply chains, forging new alliances.
Alliances that didn't rely on whoever happened to be sitting in the Oval Office at the time. It forced the birth of a multipolar world.
A completely new strategic alliance for the 21st century.
Right, shifting away from that traditional unipolar world order we saw after the Cold War.
Okay, so we've got the elected officials in DC gridlocked, and we've got world leaders across the globe completely restructuring their alliances. But as I was reading through this list of 100 people, a question just kept bothering me.
What was it?
Well, we spent all our time analyzing politicians, right? But when you, the listener, woke up this morning, you probably checked your phone. Maybe you looked at a mortgage rate or bought groceries or used an AI tool for work.
Right.
You are not feeling the daily impact of like an empty speech given on the floor of the Senate.
No, you're feeling the direct impact of unelected power players.
Yes. The people who actually control the algorithms, the money supply, and the law. To me, the most fascinating part of this 100-person list is the heavy inclusion of big tech, the Federal Reserve, and the courts.
It's a crucial shift. Let's start with the economy. The dossier lists Jerome Powell right alongside world leaders.
and Janet Yellen and Christine Lagarde.
And rightfully so. As the chair of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell had more direct influence over the daily material reality of the global population than almost any legislator.
Because of interest rates.
Exactly. When the Federal Reserve raises interest rates by even a fraction of a percent to combat inflation, it instantly alters the housing market, corporate hiring, the cost of debt globally.
It's just pure mathematical power. And the dossier also touches on climate through figures like Bill Gates and Greta Thunberg shaping that conversation. But then you look at the tech side.
Ah, yep.
The text highlights Elon Musk as arguably the most influential entrepreneur of the era, alongside Mark Zuckerberg, Tim Cook, and the AI pioneers like Sam Altman, Demis Hassabis, and Dario Amodei.
We really need to define what kind of power we're talking about here with tech, because this isn't just about selling consumer gadgets, you know?
Right.
This is what the text identifies as algorithmic power. During this window, algorithmic power began to rival and sometimes even supersede traditional state power.
See, I want to push on that, because when you say superseding state power, traditionally, a government can just regulate a company. Mm. It feels like we are watching a stage play of politicians while big tech and the Fed are the ones actually building the theater.
That's a brilliant way to put it. Because yes, traditionally a government regulates, but think about the deployment of generative AI.
Oh.
When figures like Sam Altman released large language models to the public, they bypassed the slow, deliberative structures of government entirely.
They didn't ask for permission.
Not at all. They didn't ask for a permit to alter the global economy. They just deployed the technology. And suddenly, every regulatory body on Earth had to scramble to react to a reality that a private tech lab had already built.
Wow. Yeah. Or, like, consider Elon Musk providing satellite internet to active war zones.
Exactly. That is a private citizen making decisions that directly affect military outcomes and international diplomacy.
It's literally like the politicians are arguing over what the speed limit should be, while a handful of tech CEOs are quietly deciding where the roads actually go.
And who is allowed to drive on them. The infrastructure of reality was being privatized. A social media platform's internal content moderation policy often had a faster, more measurable impact on democratic elections than campaign finance laws did.
That is wild. And speaking of writing the rules of reality, we have to talk about the final branch of unelected power here, the law. We mentioned Mitch McConnell's strategy earlier, but the dossier lists the actual individuals who materialized that shift on the Supreme Court.
Right. John Roberts, Clarence Thomas, Amy Coney Barrett, Ketanji Brown Jackson.
And people like Special Counsel Jack Smith on the prosecutorial side.
These aren't people who have to worry about the next election cycle, you know?
No, they have lifetime appointments or at least immense institutional insulation.
When the Supreme Court issues a ruling, they are instantly, fundamentally rewriting the boundaries of personal liberty, corporate regulation, and executive power for hundreds of millions of people.
It is the ultimate exercise of hard institutional power.
But there is a missing link here in our discussion.
What do you mean?
Well, we have the tech CEOs building the digital roads, the Fed controlling the money, the judges interpreting the law, and the politicians fighting for the wheel. How does the public even know what is happening? How does a complex judicial ruling or some obscure AI breakthrough translate into a cultural crisis?
Which brings us to the final piece of the puzzle, the final category of the 100 people, the narrative shapers.
The media, the public intellectuals, and the grassroots civic leaders.
Because without them, none of this power actually translates into public action, does it?
Exactly. They are the translators. They convert all these institutional mechanics into a story the public can consume, internalize, and ultimately react to.
And the hallmark of this era was the complete just shattering of the traditional media ecosystem.
Shattered is the right word. Looking at this section of the dossier is wild.
It really is. You have traditional broadcast titans listed side by side with totally new media disruptors. Like, you know, remember, we are looking at them neutrally as historical influencers of thought here.
Right. Purely as narrative forces.
Right. You have Tucker Carlson and Rachel Maddow on the same list as Joe Rogan. You have independent journalists like Bori Weiss next to long-form interviewers like Lex Fridman.
The gatekeepers of the 20th century, you know, the singular nightly news anchor who told the entire country what the unified truth was, they completely lost their monopoly.
They just vanished as the ultimate authority.
In their place, you had this highly decentralized landscape where individual personalities commanded audiences that absolutely dwarfed traditional networks.
But, you know, I struggle with this a bit.
How so?
Well, I struggle with putting a podcaster or a YouTube host on the same historical tier of influence as a Supreme Court justice or president? I mean, a three-hour podcast interview doesn't draft federal legislation. It doesn't overturn a legal precedent.
You would think so, but the dossier actually argues that you have the causality backward there.
Really?
Yeah. Law and legislation do not happen in a vacuum. They are downstream from culture.
Fact.
By the time a political debate reaches the floor of Congress or a case makes it to the Supreme Court, the public narrative, the underlying pressure on those institutions, has already been shaped and solidified by those exact media personalities.
Ah, I see. They set the boundaries of what is even politically possible.
Exactly. They are framing the stakes of the game before the players even take the field.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And alongside those broadcasters, you have the thinkers, right? The analysts trying to make sense of the macro chaos.
Authors like Yuval Noah Harari, Anne Applebaum, Timothy Snyder, Peter Zenon.
They were providing the historical maps. It pointed to things like demographic collapse or the fragility of democracy, giving the public a framework to understand what they were experiencing.
And then you have the civic movements, the political disruptors who took those narratives and turned them into grassroots action.
The people who pull the political center in entirely new directions. The dossier points to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders shifting the economic dialogue on the left.
And you have Marjorie Taylor Greene pulling the populist right.
And figures who just defied traditional party lines entirely, like Liz Cheney or Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
What's fascinating here is that these narrative shapers and activists were often fiercely, directly opposed to one another. I mean, they spent this entire era actively fighting to dismantle each other's worldviews.
And yet here they are, bound together in this one historical document. I mean, think about your own media diet over the last decade, you listening right now. Which of these voices helped you make sense of the world? And which ones made you want to just, I don't know, turn off the news entirely and disappear into the woods?
It's a great question, because the friction between them is what actually created the culture.
That friction is the defining characteristic of the era.
Right. You cannot tell the story of the 2020s by only looking at the progressives, or only looking at the populists, or only looking at the tech founders. The history is located in the collision between all of them.
So let's bring this all together. What is the grand synthesis of Dossier Trump 2015-2029? We started with this future history book, trying to explain a dizzying era. We looked at the politicians gridlocked in D.C., the global leaders forced to forge new alliances,
the unelected tech billionaires and central bankers quietly building the infrastructure of reality,
and the media voices battling over the narrative.
The grand synthesis is that history is never shaped by one person alone. It is a collective, interconnected web. When future historians analyze this window, they will not see a solo act.
No.
They will see a complex, sometimes harmonious, but mostly deafening cacophony of these 100 specific individuals.
They were working together. They were fighting each other tooth and nail. But collectively, they fundamentally redrew the global economic and technological map of the 21st century. I mean, it's the politician regulating the coder.
The podcaster critiquing the judge.
The judge limiting the politician. It's just a continuous loop.
And for you as the listener, understanding this era means learning to look past the loudest single event. It is so easy to get caught up in the anger or the excitement of, you know, one specific election cycle or one viral moment.
Oh, totally.
But true historical literacy means recognizing the massive machinery underneath. It means understanding how algorithmic power, strategic autonomy, and narrative framing built the specific world you are navigating today.
You really have to see the whole board, which leaves me with one final provocative thought for you to mull over as you go about the rest of your day.
Right.
If the years 2015 to 2029 were defined by this specific list of 100 people, by their arguments, their inventions, their political strategies, who are the unknown names right now, today, quietly building the foundation for the next list of 100?
That is a great question.
Right. Are they currently sitting in a university library somewhere? Are they writing a new language model in a garage? Or maybe organizing a local community meeting that literally no one is paying attention to yet. History isn't just something we study. It is being shaped right now, this very second, by people whose names we don't even know. So who do you think will be on the next list?
It's a profound thought, because the one constant in history is that the board is always eventually reset.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. It has been an absolute blast unpacking the mechanics of history with you today. Until next time, keep questioning the narrative, keep learning how the machine works, and keep your eyes open.
Take care, everyone.